Hey, Chris. How's it going, bud? Hello, Kyle. Do you see Chris here?
Yes.
Are you ready for the podcast today, Chris?
Big ready.
Howdy roundabout, all you Shaggy Goose Egg boys. And welcome to this totally normal episode with the three hosts.
Hey,
who
everybody.
We are, Kyle, me, and Chris.
Hey,
who
everybody.
Is obviously
I
here.
Am Chris! Hey, everybody. This is the range of my voice in the middle of a sentence.
And he is obviously here, as you can see him. What movie are we doing today, Chris? Oh, that's a good one, Chris. I'm excited to talk about this episode, Chris, because as you said,
because, you know, this movie's about dinosaurs. Poor old dinosaurs. It's about dinosaurs. They are child wrens.
Ew.
Sorry.
I don't like that Claire laughed so hard at that. Because like I didn't. We don't need to encourage any more of that.
It wasn't because it was funny.
It was because it wasn't.
Because he's having a stroke.
How do I get this on?
Is that why I'm smelling toast? I smell toast when other people have strokes. I don't know if you knew that. Little interesting.
Is he waiting to do the recap?
Yeah, I'm going to do the recap. Well, I'm going to read a little bit of the Wikipedia because I kind of forgot the first 10 minutes of it because I was working while I watched
this
movie.
The film is an hour long, so the last few films...
Just leave my fossilized dinosaur turd right there.
Speaking of dinosaur... During the Age of the Dinosaurs, a massive famine forces several herds of dinosaurs to seek an oasis known as the Great Valley.
1988, to be exact.
Yes, the 1988. The same year, the Care Bears movie came out, which is a pretty good movie, actually. Among these, a mother in a diminished long neck herd, which long necks are bronchiosauruses.
Not brontosaurus.
I was going to say, they're the ones that cough a lot.
Yeah, brontosauruses are the ones with the long necks. The mother gives birth to a single baby named Littlefoot, who is the protagonist of this film.
He's also Native American.
Yes. Years later, Littlefoot encounters Sarah, spelled C-E-R-A, as in Michael Sarah, the right only there. Dinosaur left.
Yeah. That's why I'm so confused.
She has a three-horn, but she's a triceratops. You know,
what
Sarah,
was it?
Ha, ha, ha.
What, Michael Ceratops?
Yeah, Michael Ceratops.
Until Sarah's father intervenes and says, three horns can't be with long necks because dinosaurs are racist. So
it's true. That's why we got rid of them.
But then Littlefoot's mother has to explain to Littlefoot that, you know, some dinosaurs only interact with their own species because that's just kind of the world that we live in. And that night, Littlefoot follows a hopper, which is a frog.
Michael
it's a
Jackson.
Prehistoric frog.
I'm a kid.
Where he runs into Sarah again. And, you know, they play around because they actually want to be good friends. And then a sharp tooth comes in. And sharp tooth is a T-Rex. And they have to run away from the T-Rex. But then Littlefoot's mother comes in and tries to save him. But then the sharp tooth kill the mother. And the mother about to die. And in a very Simba Mufasa-like fashion, she tells him... remember who you are, and you guys
are my son.
And she describes the Great Valley, which is where they need to go for safety, because now he is an orphan, and she dies, and she's like, look up to the stars, and I will be there to guide you, because this is a lot like Lion King. Right after Littlefoot's mother dies, Littlefoot's like, oh, can't get any worse than this, fucking earthquake comes in and divides the continental plates and shit. The sharp tooth comes back in and divides Littlefoot and Sarah and the other dinosaurs from their herds. Several die in the process, including Littlefoot's mother. I already read that part.
That was funny.
already read that part. confused and in grief, Littlefoot meets an old clubtail named Rooter, who consoles him. And he is then guided by his mother's voice telling him to follow the sun to the Great Valley and pass several landmarks, such as a rough formation that resembles a lawn egg and the mountains that burn, which are volcanoes. Later, Littlefoot meets a big mouth named Ducky and a flyer named Petrie. So they accompany them on their journey, and Sarah, who is attempting to find her own kind, finds the unconscious Sharptooth inside a ravine and inadvertently wakes him up. She escapes and bumps into Littlefoot, Ducky, and Petrie. She tells them that Sharptooth is alive and pursuing them, but Littlefoot does not believe her. As Michael Sarah describes his encounter, she accidentally flings Ducky to the direction of a lone hatching spike tail.
Oh no.
Which is a baby stegosaurus named Spike, who doesn't say anything because he's just a baby, but he's big. Ducky brings Spike along, and they go back on their journey to find the Great Valley, where they discover a cluster of trees. And they're like, oh, hey, food, finally some food. But then a bunch of adult longnecks charge in, and they essentially stomp over the children, don't even, like, acknowledge them, and just eat all of the food. So now the children are left to die and starve, and so they have to essentially just huddle up for the night and hope that nothing bad happens to them. The next morning, they are attacked by Sharptooth, but they manage to escape through a tunnel that is too small for him to follow. Beyond this, they discover the landmarks mentioned by Littlefoot's mother. Before the volcanic range, a clash between Littlefoot's intention to follow his mother's directions and Sarah's strong will. And Sarah's...
Oh boy, I'm glad Wikipedia doesn't copyright.
And Sarah's strong-willed insistence on going a different way results in a fight breaking out between them that causes the others to follow Sarah, forcing Littlefoot to continue alone. That was all one sentence. However, when Ducky and Spike become endangered by lava and Petrie gets stuck in a tar pit, Littlefoot returns to rescue... Littlefoot returns
to rescue
them.
It seems like you're on the verge of drinking at all times. You're just like, you're right here.
Anyway, Sarah gets ambushed by a pack of dome heads, and the rest of the group pose as a tar monster, scaring away the dome heads because they were in the tar, and then they're like, hey, we're going to save Sarah. And so they do. And then Sarah realizes that it's them, but then she's, like, still too prideful. She's like, hey, no, I wasn't scared of them. But then she walks away and then she cries because she's like, ah, I wasn't as big and bad as I thought I was. Later, while crossing a pond, Petrie overhears the Sharptooth nearby. The group devises a scheme to lure him to the pond and drown him in the deep side using a nearby boulder, Looney Tunes style. So during
is that what it says?
No.
Okay.
That's
so
funny.
So during the ensuing struggle, a draft from the Sharptooth's nostrils enables Petrie to fly for the first time. The plan nearly fails when the Sharptooth begins attacking the boulder while the group attempts to push it onto him. However, Michael Sarah, having finally overcome his sorrow, reunites with the group and headbutts the boulder, causing the Sharptooth to fall into the water, the boulder crashing into him in the process. The Sharptooth momentarily takes Petrie down with him, seemingly to his death, and Ducky cries about this and is sad as shit. But Petrie later emerges unharmed.
It does say that.
Littlefoot alone follows a cloud resembling his mother, Mufasa-style, which guides him to the Great Valley. He is then joined by the others. Upon arrival, the five are reunited with their families, and Petrie impresses his family with his newfound flight. Ducky introduces Spike to her family, who adopts him because his parents are probably fucking dead or just didn't care about him, eating grass or some shit. And Michael Cera reunites with his father, and Littlefoot finds his grandparents who take him in because now he is a bastard. The group then rejoins at the top of the hill and embrace each other in a hug. The end. And then they made like 11 more movies, despite the fact that the actress of Ducky actually died.
The last one came out in 2016, I believe. So
really?
Yeah.
I didn't know they were still making them. Really?
Yeah, well, I think that was the last one.
It was certainly in the 2010s. Okay.
So now we can do our introductions.
I think that was a pretty good recap.
It was. You know what, Chris? It was a great recap.
One of your best.
Yeah, I know.
It was a great recap.
You didn't miss a beat.
Yeah.
2016, yeah. The Land Before Time. And
a decade in between that one and the one before.
But you know what's really curious?
What?
Is that they're all the same age, it looks like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they just kind of take place. It's kind of like almost Ice Age in the fact that it like takes place during this time and these different things that happen during this age, you know, happen, but no time visibly passes, or they're immortal.
That's also possible.
In fact, I hear that in the one that's coming out in 2022 this year.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Is there actually one?
Yeah, the one that's coming out is in the modern day, but they're still the same age.
Oh, okay.
And they actually run like a whole cartel.
Well, you know what's really interesting that you say that now about them being immortal? I feel like immortality only exists because we can put a length on it, right? A time at which we exist, right?
Mm-hmm.
But this is the Land Before Time, and you can only age.
That's true. If there's time.
If there's time.
Yeah. If there's no time passing, then you don't age, but you could theoretically, would you exist forever or never exist? Cause time hasn't passed. If you were stuck in the
you're misunderstanding.
In the same microsecond.
You're the same. No.
Nanosecond.
You only grow older as the numbers of your age go up. So
it's not a biological thing. It's if I look
right.
Like I had my birthday a few weeks ago, right?
Happy birthday.
Yeah, well, no, it's okay. You guys already told me. You guys made me a cake and
we got
that new car too.
We want the people to know though.
Yeah.
It's, you know.
But so if I didn't say how old I was then I wouldn't have aged. Because that's how it works. Because it's putting the number on it, right?
Well, right. If you would have just said, I'm still 17.
Yeah.
Then...
Which I am, yeah. Big trouble.
You would still be 17.
Big trouble 17. In Little Soho for somebody.
Yeah. But back to the movie. to the movie. Did you guys grow up with Land Before Time?
I've seen the first one before, but that's it.
I had never watched, like, any of those movies all the way through. It would always be on at, like... after school, like I would see bits and pieces of it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I've ever seen like any of the first movie. I know I've seen a bunch of like the other ones, bits and pieces.
I haven't seen any of the other ones, which is really weird because when I was watching this one, I was like, I thought this was going to be more kid cartoon looking. Whereas this one, you can still see like the animation cells and stuff.
Oh yeah,
I like that look in animation.
Oh, yeah.
Now I will say I did not like this movie at all.
Really?
Yeah. Like they're beyond it looking really, really nice in some scenes, which it does because I like that style.
I always thought
everything about this movie annoyed the fuck out of me.
Really?
I couldn't, especially as soon as the other companions came in, that one with like the really high pitched voice and she was like
Ducky.
Ducky and
makes me sad.
Yeah. But here's the thing, she was annoying. Really? Every time she talked, I wanted to just stop the movie.
Well, every time she talked, I wanted to stop the movie, but for a completely different reason.
Yeah, I didn't want to cry.
Mm-hmm. I was a fan of The Land Before Time, so much so that I even had a PS2 game that I played.
I mean, I was a fan of Land of the Lost.
So when Avery, Avery recommended this, my roommate, I forgot to.
Oh, we didn't even pull up the Jake. Yeah.
well, I'm into, but, you know, he went into the rehab.
Happy holidays. The thing with me is that...
But it's okay, because he literally just put Landon four times, so...
Avery, get it together, okay?
All right, now.
Yeah, no, I mean, I did sort of grow up with the movies, but, like, I would constantly avoid them whenever I saw it on TV because, to me, it annoyed me, the bits and pieces that I saw. Mm-hmm. But, like, seeing the movie all the way through, I'm like, oh, okay, I get it. And like, the animation I liked, the character designs always grossed me out for some reason. It was specifically the face. It was specifically the faces, but, yeah, they look old. Especially Littlefoot. Which doesn't help when he's the main protagonist. But, yeah, it's just... I feel like the 1988 Care Bears movie would have been a better pick, so...
See, I am the opposite of you. I actually really enjoyed this movie. And I feel like we're going to talk about this, because I feel like you're going to have the exact opposite reaction that I'm about to have.
Yeah.
This movie felt... It felt pure, in a sense. It felt like... It was devoid of an agenda.
I feel like in a way it kind of did. I see what you mean.
So what do you mean in a way? Like when you say in a way, you mean it's sort like there were parts of it that did, but not wholly? What is the not wholly about it?
Well, it's not an agenda as in like, you know, you're supposed to like, think a certain way. It's more like going against the generations before you, because I mean obviously it's like they're children living among generations of adults who, you know, have grown up around things like and have like developed things in their minds and lifestyles like racism and classism and shit like that. But then when like they're children and they're still developing, and in that crucial moment of developing, they're facing a disaster, and they see that they can't look toward the adults for help because they just stomp over them and go and eat all the food, and it's just it's do or die. So they stick together to survive. So I don't know. I guess it's just like it's going against agendas.
So, well, I agree with you, and that's kind of what I'm saying, as I think that this, it's not trying to present this lofty idea that's super complex. I think it's kind of just, like, presenting this idea of being kind to everyone, no matter who they are.
As long as you can use them.
You think so?
No, but I thought that would be a good segue into what I was going to say. I don't think this movie understands what it's trying to say. Specifically, I think the ending actually ruins the entire thematic message. Because I agree with what Chris was saying, where it's like, you know, they're like, oh, we don't play with, you know, dinosaurs that are, you know, different from us. And it's like, that's the way that it always is. That's just how it is. Mm-hmm. Like, that's what all the adults have the consensus. Can't explain why, that's just how it is, right? Yeah. And the kids obviously want to go against that because they don't see this divide because they weren't, you know, they haven't been taught it, mm-hmm. right? At the beginning at least. And I was like, oh, that's interesting because obviously, because I remember there being a group of them and I was like, okay, so obviously what this is going to be about is this is going to be about Littlefoot being the altruist and being like, hey, let's come together and, you know, we'll have better luck of doing everything than as alone, right? And that's where it kind of goes. And then at the very end, after they get through all this and they're like, yeah, it is better to be together, huh? And then they get back and then they go to live in paradise with the same people who instigated those rules in the first place, where they have no authority whatsoever to go against them. Nor, as we've seen in the film, do they have any ability to. Because every time something is said from the adults, that's what happens because they're the adults. And now you go to live with them after you had this life-changing experience. And it doesn't seem that wasn't addressed. There wasn't even a line where like the kids were together and the adults were like, what are you doing? They're like, we're friends. He helped me get through this. Yeah. Oh, wow. Maybe you're not as bad. I was expecting that. And they didn't do that. And it was really weird. And I'm like, what are you trying to accomplish with that ending? And I think it has a more almost like religious feeling to it than it does this, like, you know, moralizing of like racism through the lens of, you know, the animal kingdom, which is where I thought it was going to go. And I don't think it fulfilled that.
So I agree with you about the end. And I think that what we have here is a common case of happy ending syndrome.
Yeah.
Or whatever you want to call it. Where basically Littlefoot has, and everyone has essentially lost their family entirely. And so I think the happy ending, at least the one that they went with, the only thing that could have been the happiest is that they find their family.
Yeah.
And now Spike does end up going with Ducky, so there is a little bit of that. But also, they are, the children are taught that a little bit. Because with Michael Ceratops specifically, shout out Kyle if you get that one. Because you came up with it.
So Yeah. Okay.
Michael Ceratops, we see she's the biggest exemplary of this already being instilled in the children.
Yeah.
Throughout almost the entire film until
the racism.
Yeah. Well,
just the idea of your difference.
This being so, embodied.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
Until the very end when she comes and she pushes the rock and it kills a shark tooth hoo-ha-ha.
Shark, you did, god damn it, you did it before, dude.
Shark meat, hoo-ha-ha. And then shark with Littlefoot too, we see because when he is like laying down at the edge of the pond and Ducky comes up, he's like, Longnecks don't talk to you, whatever you are. So that is presented a little bit. So I agree.
I would think that was, for Littlefoot, it almost seems like that was just done out of, like, spite at that point. Because, you know, he had just lost his mom, and he didn't really know where to go, and then it was just like, you know, like, when you have, like, a bad day, and you're just a dick?
Well, sure, but it still happened, which means that inside of him, at least somewhere, there is that idea that.
Well, it's because it was taught to him by his adults, and so he's looking for the adults, and so since he doesn't have them, he embodies the surface-level values.
Right. No, I agree. Yeah. I agree.
So the other problem that I have, and this goes into it, is not just the ending that does that. It's the entire motivation for Littlefoot. To get to this place, he's following the wisdom of the past, right? Which is fine, but you introduce the idea that the wisdom of the past is not always to be, you know, taken, you know, on faith, and yet he sees these visions of his mom, you know, telling him, you know, go for it, son, do this. But his mom's also a racist, or at the very least, you know, abides in that system. She's not anti-racist. So
she is racist.
So, yeah. There you go.
Right, okay. Well, as we discussed
in the last episode, the dictionary is always right, so that must mean she's racist.
Yes.
But it's just weird, like the mixed messaging almost that this movie has. And like when you watch it on the surface, you're like, yeah, that makes sense. But when you go to think about it on anything beyond exactly what the movie's telling you, it doesn't quite add up. It's the position you have to take is the wisdom of the past to be accepted at face value, or is it to be challenged?
Well, I think it's to
and,
be...
And it's not that to challenge it. I suppose you can be like, well, in the movie, it's you challenge it, but at the same time, there is some wisdom there, so you don't throw away the baby with the bathwater, but it doesn't present that.
You don't?
Shit. Oh, no, we live on the second floor. But
oh no,
it's just
it's a good thing there are screens in the windows,
yeah, so people can watch it.
So again, I understand what you're saying, but number one, I would ask you, like, who was this movie made for?
Well, it was made for kids.
I think it was but even more so those children, like maybe five-ish. I would say five-ish, five, six.
I could see like three to like eight enjoying.
Okay, yeah. So yeah,
it was originally meant for like young children. Actually, the writers of An American Tale were picked up for this. The first draft, I just read this on Wikipedia. The first draft was thrown out because they said it was too juvenile, and so then they legitimately just threw in the theme of racism.
Yeah,
to make it a little bit more profound.
That kind of that makes a lot more sense.
Yeah, because it was just kind of shoehorned in there.
Yeah, because it's not resolved.
Yeah,
and it's not integral to the story necessarily. That makes a lot more sense to me, actually.
It would have been hard to have stuck the landing with it.
No, I mean it's just about getting to this idealized promised land that the elder, you know, promises you, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, that and then getting there by yourself, getting there without the help of an adult, you know, I think that's enough for like a kid's movie, you know, to say, hey, you know, you can be independent. You know, if it fosters independence in a kid without degradation of, you know, parents' ideology, I suppose, then, you know, I think that's fine for a kid's movie. I think that's what most kids' movies were before
Shrek
5 years ago.
To kind of piggyback on that, the creators, Don Bluth, Steven Spielberg, and George Lucas, they originally wanted the film to have no dialogue, but the idea was abandoned in favor of using voice actors in order to make it more appealing to children. I feel like if it had no dialogue...
Yeah.
It would have been...
Well, that would have been pretty beautiful, too.
It would have been, like, a precursor to Primal, which, if you guys have not seen that...
Yeah, that video game. It's awesome. Far Cry? Yeah.
Yeah, wasn't very good. That's
Far Cry
good.
Primal.
No, do not compare.
Well, so two things. One, I think, again, I want to focus on who this is meant for. Because I think that if it's for these children between 3 and 8, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's before... they can necessarily develop abstract thought, right? So they can't reach these lofty ideas or at least articulate them. So well, I think associating like these children with actions, I think at least in some capacity, it does get the message across, at the very least, that, you know, even though we're all different, we can still be friends.
Yeah. No, I agree. Like, you know, children don't really develop abstract thought until, like, you know, really, really into their, like, early teens is when that's really fostered. And I agree with that. And that's what children's movies kind of do. It's not only, like, your first introduction into, you know, narrative storytelling, and that's why most of the stories are very basic in terms of, you know, how they're written and everything. It's to so that you can abstract from that, okay, this is what a narrative is, and then you can apply that to other films and you know, stories that our culture tells. But the point of using animals and not people is because you can make something complex and boil it down and give it a face that is not a person,
mm-hmm.
right? And, you know, like with Toy Story, for one, you know, and you can take...
Well, Woody has a face.
Yeah, but it's not a human, right? And so there's a degree of separation already in that. And so when you do that, I think that makes it... I think you're able to indoctrinate kids without having them understand what they're being indoctrinated to think. And I don't mean that in like a purely negative term, because all education is indoctrination. It's shaping the way that you think.
Which is, and all education is negative.
Well, yeah. Don't think.
I went to school, and now look at me.
Yeah.
You have to feel it. Don't think. Use your instincts.
$10.
$10. I don't want any of your dinosaur.
Not that you've had it in your mouth. Nice.
Insider boys.
Okay. But yeah, that's the point of the children's movies is to indoctrinate you into an easily digestible system of beliefs. And that way, when you go to, you know, public school or you interact with people, you have this narrative framework in which you can understand more complicated things in the world, because we always see everything we do in the framework of a narrative. That's why, you know, you get home from the end of the day and someone asks you how your day was, you don't, and if you care at all to, you know, express anything, you tell them the story of your day. You don't just go, you know, how was your day? It's like, this thing happened and it pissed me off. It's like, well, you know, I got there and then this all happened. And you follow a sort of narrative, and good stories that you tell, like when you're with your friends, like we were on New Year's Eve, you guys remember
right,
that,
right,
yeah.
Right, 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 right.
You know, when you're with your friends and you're hanging out, the good stories that you tell are the ones that follow the closest to a three act structure narrative. Now it's shorter, obviously, because they're shorter stories.
Like this movie.
But I mean, that is because you view your life through the prism of a narrative, because the fundamental question that you have is, how do I act? And so you see that developed and made emblematic through characters and narrative works. And so you can abstract from that and say, okay, this is the value, whether you can put it to words or not, but you can say, okay, this is the value, and I can be like that. I can be like this person or this animal. So the problem is people take that too far, and now we got furries, but... Yeah, not on this podcast.
No. I agree with that, and that's where I've got so at a higher level, beyond that 5-year gap that you kind of posited. I do agree that this movie becomes it falls apart very quickly, but I do think that in that age range, that I do think it has merit.
I'm not saying I wouldn't show this to like my kids or something.
Yeah. Well, you shouldn't, because it's education.
That's true.
And therefore,
fair enough. But also, they're too young right now. So you're not supposed to have screen time till you're 4. So, all you parents out there, you should know that.
Is that real?
Mm-hmm.
I'm gonna remember that.
It messes with your cognitive function.
I'm not surprised at all.
The more screen time you have before the age of 4, the more likely it is you develop autism.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, you said it. Dang. Okay. Yeah, dude.
If it's really rainy,
I do want to talk. Is it?
Yeah, that's why there's higher. There's a correlation between rainier areas and autism.
So live in the desert.
Yeah, if you live in the desert, you can't have autism.
if you go into the desert.
No,
well, it goes away. It evaporates.
Well, that's fun. The idea is that when
you have to boil the autism out.
The idea is that when it rains, you're more likely to be inside, and when you're inside, you're more likely to be watching TV. That's the correlation. That's why there's like higher levels of autism, like Seattle.
That explains the behavior of everyone in Twilight.
I don't really like the rain. Any cold, wet thing, I don't really.
You stay very still. Don't move.
What are you gonna say?
Am I wrong?
Well, to your point, and you kind of agreed.
I got that from a book, all sources below.
And this might be a symptom of them horseshoeing in the racism card.
Mm-hmm.
Is I don't know if I would have liked it more if there was no dialogue. I can
see.
Well,
if it follows the same story, probably.
Well, and that's what I'm saying. Yeah. Well, number one, primarily, the existence of the sharp-toothed hoo-ha-ha.
If it had more, like, visually striking scenes, I feel like... Like as the way it is, I feel like it wouldn't benefit from being no dialogue. But,
sure.
Like, if they had done something to, compensate for that, then yeah, I think it would have been a better movie.
Because
a lot of it feels like it's just not really that thought out.
Well, I agree.
That's why I think The Good Dinosaur should have been without dialogue.
I haven't seen all of that one.
It's not that great, but I honestly think if there was no dialogue in that movie and they, like, you know, kind of changed some, tweak some things, that would have been, like, really, really good.
You guys really need to watch Primal.
You need to really watch Inside Out. So
I will.
If there wouldn't have been any dialogue, I think we would have lost something with the sharp tooth hoo-ha. Because I feel like there's something there. I don't know what it is, but the fact that the carnivores, from what we can tell, do not have the ability to speak. At the very least.
Mm-hmm.
And so...
That's interesting.
Well, have we seen any beyond?
No.
Okay, mm-hmm. I didn't think so.
But also the red eyes.
Mm-hmm.
So that... I don't know what it's saying. But I think there's something there.
Well, it's because... Well, that's one of the most obvious thing that separates us from the animals is our ability to speak. What is speech, then? I mean... There's a lot of things that it is, you know, it's sounds that represent objects, you know, tools and obstacles, but...
sentience, I think, is the...
Well, it's being able to attribute something to something else, right? It's being able to attribute sound to an object, to an idea even, something abstract. It's being able to express what something is to another person and have them understand. That's what makes speech so powerful, is because you're able to transmit ideas. And I think where they're going, possibly, I don't know if this is intentional, but we assume everything is here. Since the carnivores attack their fellow dinosaurs, and as the movie is trying to portray, there is no difference, even though they look different, they're all equal and everything, they're all, you know, great. Since the carnivores, which it becomes different because they have to do it by necessity or they die, but, which is another place that this falls apart, and very much in Zootopia lane, where it's like, oh yeah, all the predators represent minorities, and it's like, are you saying minorities are, they have to aggress the prey characters? Are you, like, cause that, it hides in itself when it's trying to talk about race, Zootopia hides racist ideas through fighting racism, which is the most leftist thing I've ever heard.
Speaking of furries, Kazootopia.
Yeah.
Anyway,
but
unfortunately,
yeah, I think the idea here,
shut up,
that the predators don't talk is simply that, because they're not able to communicate ideas, and that's what makes them aggressive. Because I mean, think about that. Like, if you're not able to express yourself, I mean, think of how either lonely or aggressive that might make you. If you were the only one in the world who spoke a certain language, or you couldn't talk to somebody, just imagine how terrible that would be.
Well, but not just, but existing with everyone else too.
Right.
I think so. I could see that 100%. I think that's a very viable explanation, but it also reminds me of Gamork from Neverending Story, the wolf.
It has been forever since I've seen...
The
wait,
wolf...
Wait, is that the second one?
No, that's the first one. Gamork is the wolf that he fights.
Can you pull up a picture?
Yeah.
Wait, is he the big one?
No, he's not the one that flies.
Oh, okay. I couldn't remember if that was a dragon or what that was.
Oh,
it's the wolf.
Don't remember that.
I'm going to be honest, I don't remember that. And I watched the two Neverending Stories a lot when I grew up. But I do not remember that.
I only ever saw the first one once.
Yeah,
maybe we should do that on the podcast.
Yep.
Neverending Story is phenomenal. It's, I mean, yeah, he fights Atreyu fights Gamork. Well, but what Gamork is, so there is the nothing that is encroaching and basically destroying everything that is known, right? But Gamork is essentially the manifestation of the nothing.
Mm-hmm.
The physical manifestation that is tangible.
Yeah.
And
it's been a while since I've seen that, but I know a lot of times aggression is usually attributed with ignorance. So nothing could also be similar to that. It's the ignorance that kills what is here.
Yeah.
And I think that could also come back to the Land Before Time.
Well, that's what I'm kind of getting at, is that maybe Sharptooth Ooh-Ah-Ah is the manifestation of the destruction of what they've known, mm-hmm. the world or whatever, the pre-Gia that they know. Because yeah. I think because again I feel like there's something there, so that may.
Well,
that
it's
may
interesting
be
that,
that
they have to kill him, too, before they get into the Promised Land.
That's it.
Yeah.
He is the manifestation of their ending, right? And as you just said, sometimes the nothing or whatever is presented also with this idea of ignorance, okay? And so if the Sharptooth is this manifestation of this ignorance and... it is chasing them. It is trying to destroy them.
It has to be dealt with before they can reach this utopia.
Right.
Yeah.
Because the Sharptooth exists where everything else did exist.
Yeah.
And where everything else did exist was where ignorance existed in the parents.
Yeah.
And so the reason that... this land is dying is because this ignorance exists.
It's running rampant.
Right, and so in order for that ignorance to be gone, they have to let it die.
and so maybe the people, the parents and everybody who were there had to conquer their own T-Rex. Their own ignorance maybe you're not allowed to go into that land without battling the dragon, you know.
Yes, potentially, maybe,
because that would solve the issue that I had, at least with the ending, you know, not being any form of resolution.
Well, so what I was going to say to that is that this. Because it's a manifestation, we're already getting, you know, way up there.
Mm-hmm.
At least philosophically, spiritually, whatever words you want to use for that. So, when they get to, what's it called?
The Great Valley, yes.
The destruction that has been chasing them stops.
Yeah.
Even though... they are essentially on the brink, if it's a valley, of the edge of this mountain where, like, literally behind them there are cracks and crevices that have been formed that only stop when Sharptooth Ooh-Ah-Ah dies, is slain, and then doesn't go any further. Because the question that I did have was, it seems to be a natural event, and so if it is, well, what... would stop it from taking the Great Valley as well. Especially at this rate that it's forming. And so, again, if Sharptooth is the symbol, the manifestation of this, this tangible being, then also at its death, the stop of the destruction.
Well, and there's also the question as to how does everybody know about this place? And why weren't they already there? And it's like,
that's a good question.
Yeah, well, again, I think that, you know, there's the idea in our own culture that there is a form of utopia out there, and there are these great ideals to which, you know, heroes of the past have achieved. They what were they called in the story of Noah? They were the Nephilim. They were the men
Niflheim.
Of old. Yeah. Mm-hmm. From Lord
bucks.
Of the Rings.
Niflheim?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, from Lord of the Rings.
I thought they were pronounced Nephilim. or maybe I'm wrong.
Well, anyway, I'm talking about Niflheim. Like,
yeah, or maybe I'm thinking of something else.
So, but again, it's like that. They're the great and the men of old, right? And there's like a whole thing in like Enoch as well, which is one of those.
Isn't that a part of the
Enoch
Apocrypha or something? Isn't it Enoch?
I don't think First Enoch is part of the Apocrypha to my knowledge, but it is a Jewish text from around like the first or second century BC.
It's not Bible canon, at least.
Well, yeah, it's not canonical.
I love being like, yeah, the books of that aren't canon.
Canon to the mythology, but in there it says that like in the first Enoch it attributes the Nephilim to basically these angels that rebelled with Satan, went down and like raped a bunch of like women, and what was born to them were the Nephilim, which are like these giants and stuff. Mm-hmm. And it's really weird, man. Like I don't even know what to make of that. But
Satan's a bad guy.
Yeah, well, yeah, but he wasn't the one who did it.
Remember that, kids.
Yeah, remember, Satan's bad.
Unless you're watching Little Nicky.
In that case, yeah, he's pretty cool. He's still not great, but you know, he's not bad.
You can give lap dances to Satan
if you're Little Nas X. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
yeah.
You know what? I was gonna make a really bad joke.
Yeah, thank God.
Real quick, let me step in and make it worse. So I think my theory, because you were talking about Utopia, what if they actually didn't beat Sharptooth and they did die, and the reason that they just abruptly make it to the Great Valley is because that's heaven.
Yeah.
And heaven is racist. There's your agenda.
or we can get back to that Bethlehem in a second.
That's not at all.
Or Chris, this one's for you. Or Sharptooth is Krampus.
It's all connected.
He actually took them and put him in a globe.
I'll get back to you on that. Hold on.
Okay, go back to the Netflix.
No, I've completely lost my point on that. But
globe, as in Earth, we are...
No, it was the first one, because the Earth was changing to create a globe that we know today, and so they were put in it, and then Krampus went...
Every planet is Krampus's snow globe.
Oh my god. That's why the
multiverse... Tim Allen is God!
And
Krampus is the devil!
That's why the multiverse exists. It's because... And then... That's what the multiverse is it's just a bunch of Krampus globes. That have been shattered, but the water that's in the globe is like on the ground.
From now on, every movie that we review is
not
is
a review.
Every movie that we analyze on the podcast is automatically in the Krampus verse.
I did want to talk a little bit about, and this is the last thing that I really have to say.
Sorry that
it's okay.
You lost your idea about the Nephilim.
No, it's okay.
Is that how you say it?
It's a Nephilim, yeah.
Nephilim. Nephilim.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. Which it's interesting because, well, I know that's an English translation, but eem is like a suffix that you add for God. I wonder what that translates to.
God
anyways, in Hebrew. But anyways, yeah.
Did you like that?
Yeah. Yes. God.
God him. God him.
It's all coming together.
It's all
coming together.
God him.
But
hey, God him.
This is like the least amount of notes that I've ever written on a movie before. I wanted to say the what is it called? Oh yeah, the star leaf thing.
Yes.
That's carried around a few times. The mom points it out when she's still alive, and she's like, this is what you you know, this will keep you healthy, this will keep you alive. And it's in the shape of a star.
Marijuana.
And he finds it later. Stop talking about your boss. And, coworker.
We have to cut that out.
I'll just put dolphin noises over
and
it.
Got him. So
no,
got him. Okay. So, anyways, he carries a star with him, right? And at one point he sees the star, and I think he sees his mom in it too, right? In like the dew that's collected on.
Oh yeah, 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 yeah.
Which I think is interesting. And basically, and I know I've said this on the podcast before, I think this was during the summer series, if I'm remembering correctly, but I can't remember exactly which movie it was. I think it was Barnyard, actually, where I was talking about, like, what looking up to the stars
represents. Oh, yeah.
You know? And it's looking your head up towards... It's like when you raise your head to the stars, it's to acknowledge something beyond yourself. And greater than yourself, and you do it with your chin up, and you look up towards something that's greater, and you strive to achieve it, and that's why, a lot of times in narratives about that involve traveling, there's a scene where the characters look up at the stars and maybe make a wish or acknowledge maybe a little bit of futility in it. The first thing I can think of is the Muppets movie, the first one, where
which he just listened to the soundtrack today.
Yeah.
Did you actually?
Yeah. Well, I've been listening to it on... It's... You wouldn't understand. It's an inside joke.
Between...
And, nope. Stop.
And so, yes.
So... it... Okay, listen.
Keep talking about what you're talking about.
Anyways, it's... Look back at the Barnyard episode if you want a more in-detailed... thing, because I don't think I'm going to be able to talk today. But essentially, it's just, you know, you look at something that's greater and far beyond yourself, and that's generally known as the stars. You know, that's where the heavens are. That's where you orient yourself towards it, and that's why on road trips, scenes like that take place, is because you're traveling forward, and you're zigzagging a little bit. Maybe you're not always going straight towards this destination. But you're not where you started, and that's still progress, and that's why, you know, you wish upon a star. It's because you're orienting yourself towards something from the heavens.
Is that in the Muppets movie?
Wishing upon a star? No, yeah. That's Pinocchio.
Oh, okay. I haven't seen that movie.
It's slow, but it's very, very rich. Like if we. I don't think we could talk about it because it's so imbued with meaning, but...
Actually, it's a 1996 film. A teen comedian film.
That's
comedy film.
Yeah, a teen comedian.
That's you.
Yeah, because I'm 17. Yeah. So, anyways, I just thought that was interesting, and I thought it was a neat thing that they put in, and I think clearly that's symbolic as well.
Yeah.
I also want to just say last thing that I really have to offer for this movie is that I don't like it a lot, but that could be because The Lion King is like Disney's magnum opus, mm-hmm. and it does all of this better.
That's true, yeah. But it also came later.
It did. It did.
So
it's theoretically a ripoff of that other movie about the white lion.
The Lion Prince?
No. Hold on. I'll look it up. Just keep going.
You know, and I've been thinking about this, and Scorsese, I'm about to attack you, and who am I? But I was reading a book called Thinking About Criticism, written by A.O. Scott. It came out in 2019, I believe. But
Kimba the White Lion, that's what it was.
Oh, like Simba.
Well, yeah, exactly.
I've never heard of that.
Well, I know it came out before and it was like lesser known, and it's like beat for beat and thematically is like exactly the same as Lion King.
So Lion King just ripped that off?
Yeah, essentially.
Oh, wow.
I mean, granted, like it wasn't a musical, but
but he talks about the idea of the evolution of art. And it goes on to say that we can't judge,
$10.
He talks about I'm having to think, so I need you. I can't focus when you're doing that. He talked.
And how does it feel, Jake?
Not good. He talks about the idea of judging art as well, because it's a book about criticism. But he talks about how we have to be careful of judging the current with the old, but also the current with what's to come.
Mm-hmm.
And so he talks about judging what it is only as it is, and only as a comparison for reference rather than for judgment. Does that make sense to what I'm saying?
I'm sorry. He's saying judge something on its own merit, not in comparison to something else?
Correct.
Okay.
But not solely, because there is a reason...
That's a different layer.
Right. Yeah. And he talks about this because... He talks about this because as art evolves, specifically film and narrative...
That's the deal.
There are stories that are created, right, that are written... but as time goes on, those stories become more sophisticated and complex and better, because the mistakes that the past has made, the future, the current, if you do, you learn from them and it becomes better.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So I think that potentially we have a scenario here like that, whereas The Land Before Time coming out in 1988... This is, and we were talking about this with the Kingsman yeah. films as well, yeah. And so they have this new IP, this story that they're wanting to tell, that may not have been told quite this way yet, and so they write it, and for what it is, then in 1988 it's fine, but then 6 years later there comes out this film, The Lion King, that has a lot of the same themes, but it does it significantly better. And yeah. That may be because
that's just progression of art.
Sure.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's what I'm saying. And so the point I'm making at that, all of that, is yes, that to what you said, but also I think film is getting better as a whole. But also it's getting way worse. That's just
part of the progression of it.
Here's where we were in like the 30s, right? But as time has gone on, we've kind of done this, I feel like. And now it's like...
Mm.
Maybe I should do it. This is good, this is bad.
Because
you have films like Red Notice, which I just watched, where it's fun, you know, but it, as far as what it's doing, it's over here. Because it doesn't... It's not... It's nothing, you know?
It's Netflix's, like, most watched release.
Yeah.
In its history, and it's completely forgettable.
It is. It is, and then you have something like Don't Look Up, which for those of you who haven't seen it, yes, for those of you who haven't seen it, definitely watch it. But you have to understand what it's saying more than you think you understand what it's saying. Because when you watch, you're gonna go, "Oh, I know what this is saying." But take another step forward. And it's over here. And it's kind of like Idiocracy, essentially. But here's Idiocracy here, right, back in... When was 2001?
So, yeah, it's like early
around there.
Yeah.
And then we have, essentially, the same story, kind of. But it's evolved and it's become better.
Yeah, and I think that's just the nature of storytelling in general, is that it is a constant evolution. Sometimes it's better, sometimes it's worse. We know this from reboots.
Yes.
Some reboots are good, some are bad, compared to, you know, the originals. It's just what it is. I mean, I'm not saying Fantastic Four, any of those movies have ever been great, but I don't think anybody would argue that they liked the... rebooted Fantastic Four movie better than the original one. I don't think anybody would say that. I don't think they'd say the first one was that great either, but
it was fun.
At least that one had some charm to it.
Yeah.
You know?
Also it had Chris Evans. So.
Yeah. It did, yeah. But then you have other films where it's like the Sam Raimi Spider-Man movies, and then you reboot it to Andrew Garfield, which are not the same. Oh, we can talk about it now.
They are not the same.
I love Tobey Maguire.
Yes, he does.
In
what I was going to say, the Spider-Man that is obviously a difference.
No Way Home
is the Hexer. Do you know about the Hexer, Claire? Look into that. The Hexer, right, which was back in like 2012 maybe, and now you have the reboot, The Witcher.
Oh.
The Hexer was a movie. It was bad. Regardless, I don't know why I went on that tangent.
I don't know either.
But I think about that.
Yeah.
I think that's an important discussion to be had.
Mm-hmm.
Why The Hexer is bad and The Witcher's good. Only that.
That was it.
The point was to talk about Land Before Time and how Lion King is better. But that's okay, because Lion King is better because it's better. Anyway.
Just how it is. Let's rate it. We're doing that now.
You know what? Are we doing a real rating?
Yeah, we're rating.
We're doing out of 10, right?
Yes, okay. Out of 10. 5 is an average movie.
You're saying it's 5? Or no, you're positing that scale? Yeah. Okay. I would probably say... After this talk, before I was feeling pretty good about it.
Mm-hmm.
After this, 6.5 maybe.
Okay.
Is that probably what I would...
I'd give it a solid 5.
That's fair. Yeah. That's fair.
I think I would also give it a 5 as well.
Yeah.
Again, average movie.
Yeah.
I don't, like, again, it's like, you know, I would show my kids this movie, and they would probably like it.
And then I would show them Lion King.
Yeah, and then they'd be like, "Dad, I like that." And I'd be like, "I do too."
And then I would show them Kimba.
And then I'd be like, "That's the real one."
That's the real one, right?
That's
there.
The real one. So,
right. And they would go, "Why like Lion King better? Because I saw it first."
And then I'd go, "Throw the baby out with the bathwater." Right, so,
yeah,
there it is.
I don't like that kid.
Yeah.
My new baby man. Yeah. He's.
I need to go take another bath.
We're Spartans in this household, okay?
Yeah.
10 bucks if you get that reference.
If it's a woman, I throw her out.
Yeah.
Baby. You're welcome, Claire. All right.
Claire's not a woman. She's a wife. She said it.
She said it.
She said it.
When did you say that?
It was when you had to go to the bathroom. Fat Man, I believe.
Oh.
No. Yeah, I think it was Fat Man.
Regardless, it was when you left and I invited her in and she said, "Hello, I'm the wife."
Yeah.
And I was like, "Boy, hey, go, Chris... Pull it up. Okay. See?
We have no documentation.
We do. It's in video.
It's in
the
it's in the podcast.
That's what I just
but don't,
said.
Don't pull it up.
Okay. Yeah, don't pull it up.
Okay.
Anyway.
So we didn't say that at the top of the episode. How to run about Shaggy Goose Egg Boys, and this is Al Pacino's prison scene.
That.
Well, not
I think,
really.
I don't know, man.
This is a podcast where we look at movies and objectively say nothing.
If you haven't gathered that already.
And we're three college students who know nothing.
But,
objectively nothing.
But pretty soon, we won't be one of those things anymore.
We won't be.
We won't be college students.
Because I don't think we've said this yet. Welcome to graduation!
Graduation!
The series that we're in right now.
Yeah, graduation.
We're four episodes in the graduation.
Yeah. Yeah, this is what happens when you record in advance.
Sorry, no promo, guys.
We don't
got real busy.
In advance.
I mean,
we record on day. What the fuck?
We upload straight as it's
this
going.
Is it's yes. live stream, but
yeah.
not live.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
live uploaded to YouTube.
Right. And Claire is editing as we're going.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Off
so
that's why you can't see her.
That's
what this is.
Yeah.
I'm pushing to make this longer than the movie.
I know. I knew that's what you were trying to do because I was like, man, he just keeps going on.
But yeah, that's our podcast. This is what we do. We talk about movies that don't mean anything because we don't know anything.
Nope.
Nobody knows anything, really. If you're Greek and you're an ancient Greek philosopher.
If you're Greek, you know. You know what?
But yeah.
Subscribe if you know.
Subscribe if you know. Comment down below if you like this movie. Tell us why. Okay?
Yeah.
Because we want to know. Because these two, he didn't like it that much. He was I enjoyed it. He didn't have any attachment to it.
You are trying to make this longer because you're just explaining what we talked about over the last
hour.
Well,
I meant to do this at the beginning,
yeah,
but I forgot to. He didn't have any attachment. He kind of does, and I do. So there's something there, obviously. Let us know what you think. Make sure you like.
Just share.
Share
this video.
Share the episode. Hey. Also, review us. 5 stars if you don't. 5 stars, I'm probably going to kill
Spotify you. On Spotify and Apple Podcasts.
And anywhere you get your podcasts. Because
we have an audio
literally
form and
everywhere.
We have a YouTube form as well. YouTube has video, it has funny gags. So watch on there if you're not driving.
I thought that was the mic for a minute.
Rap time.
All right, hold on.
That's what I wanted. All right. Ooh.
I'm not going to do that this time.
Right. No, no, I want you to.
If this movie had no dialogue, it would be more accurate, and all that Michael Cera would say is...